Accession number 11377, reel 21.
Mr. W. Bateman, Reel 21. You were moving quite quickly in the initial stages of the invasion, Mr. Bateman, digging in at night. How was food reaching you? Was it only coming to you once during the day?
Well, it was mainly hard rations. These, what they call care packs, you know. They were bringing them up and just dishing them out, like. And we had one or two of these self-heating cans, you know, and mainly it was more like soups. But we had these care cushions, such as sweets in them and cigarettes in them, and there was even chewing gum in them, which we didn't care much for. Weed biscuits. There wasn't the hard tack that we normally got in the desert, like with the square biscuits. But with it being American packed, and I think we. There was a sweet biscuit in, but as far as, and then there was a variation of tinned different. There was a tin of chocolate in. There was a tin of cocoa, tins of soup, and I think there was some tea bags in. Or was it packets of tea? I can't remember now. We used to make our own tea out of our own. Like you say, when we had time, it owned a couple of years, we couldn't make a little small fire and warm some water up and brew a tea up. But mainly, you used to get a hot meal, soups, you used to come up at night time. But through the day, there was very rarely anything through the day.
So your cooks were getting food to you at night?
Yes, mainly at night time. And it's vaguely, I can't remember how we got it up. How we went on about meals and anything like that. It's more like a blank to us.
Mm. Were you just digging into slip trenches, lying in slip trenches?
Well, no, uncovered? No, not every time. We just, when we would form up before the move forward, they would, it's more like all hedgerows in Normandy. And as far as the cornfield dough, that was what do we call it now?
This was Langevre.
Langevre. I can't remember the name. There must have been, they call it, was it the village of Langevre? Well, we formed up behind, it was more like a wood. And the companies formed up, but we were HQ with the signals being behind. And the communication was mainly by a runner. And then the advance started, and we were down till. Then there's some tanks went across, and then when we come out to the open, we walk forward, and we stopped at the edge of the wood, and that's when we heard the battle going, and some of our own tanks had been blown up by. There was a lone 75mm gun in the hedge we had been knocked out. It eventually got knocked out, and then I moved forward. And I was going.
Did you see the attack actually going in?
No, we just saw that. Well, the cornfield. The cornfield, it was like, they could just see the men bumping, going. We didn't exactly see it, but we went forward to see. I went to the signal officer to go forward to see where the company was and see if we wanted any information, like. So I took two fellas and we went out there, and we got so far, we were told to stop because they were still fighting in the village. And that's when we saw jury tanks get blown up by this. Sherman with his great big gun on it. I think it was a. Can't remember what. And that was bigger than the jury's 88mm. And he just fired three shots and hit all the tanks. All three tanks blew up. Because the jury tank was vulnerable in the rear. His belly was vulnerable in the rear. but the front was very well armoured, and that's how we got them. Because when we were watching it, we could hear these tanks going round the other side, we could hear the trucks going, and I was saying, when's it going to open? Because we saw this, he was hidden in a bombed out house, and I said, well, when's he going to wait? Because he wasn't moving at all, like. And as a chap, another bloke said, he says, you just watch out. He says, we've seen this before. And all of a sudden, these three tanks come into view. And whether we view of him, I don't know. But I was saying, oh, he get cracking. And all the three of them were all in line. And all of a sudden, these shots went. And up went. And he just lifted the turret up and just flung his cap in the air. And all the blokes were cheering. And you could hear the screams of the judges inside. Oh, they burnt straight out. All of a sudden, they could hear the explosions going on inside of it. And all of a sudden, you seem to see the turret, mainly red hot of the shells inside. But one bad thing was happening about there. We got told about it, that the sergeant had got his head blown off by one of these tanks beforehand.
Mm. Which sergeant? Do you know his name?
I didn't know his name, but one of the advanced companies.
You had lost a lot of men going into that action. Did you come across lots of wounded and killed?
Well, we didn't come across wounded, because Sechevelle was either bringing them out or attending them at the time. But we already went to, I think it was C Company I went to, this was in this village. And they said no, they didn't want to, they were going to do it by run across the... when the explosion wasn't so far away. And that's when we heard that Colonel Wood had gone down and he had been killed in a carrier. And one of our signalers, the CO signaler with them, I don't know, I forget his name now, and he was wounded as well. The jury had blew the, I think it was one of these tanks that had blew the carrier up.
What was happening around you?
Well, there was spasms of fire and shells dropping, like. And then I think myself, we spent the night there, and I think next year we pulled out.
Who took over command of the battalion?
Major Mogg. I think he was a major. But a nice chap he was and all. And then I came back and said that C Company was all right, they had a runner. And they'd send messages back, they didn't want any lines out. And I can't remember what happens after that. And I think we got pulled out. We got ourselves all sorted. I think we got pulled so far out.
And did you get any new drafts?
I can't remember. No, we didn't lose any signals. There's no signals.
I think in terms of the battalion itself.
I don't know, I can't remember. And I think we pulled back to a rest place, and that's when they took us to Bayeux. So many at a time it was going down, and we had showers and baths in there. But there was no change of clothing. We still had our old khaki on that we'd landed with. And we had a rest there, and that's when... we start to form up again, and then that's when we start moving up to Tilly Sassoon's. I think that was it.
What was happening there?
Well, we didn't catch much, because we were back with the HQ. We were back behind the companies, and they were advancing. And I think myself, they didn't get... I think that changed and about three times. Because if I'm mistaken about what I was told... that you tried to take with one battalion, and had to withdraw, and they tried to. Eventually, they took Tilly Sassoon with the whole brigade, three battalions. And first, we set up an exchange about half a mile before Tilly Sassoon's, and we all run a line out. I don't think B Company there, and that's when I saw them carrying Major Captain. I knew him in India. He was my platoon.
What was his name again?
Clapton, Major Clapton. and they said he was being, he was seriously wounded, like, and they were expecting him to live, like. But eventually we did get to know he died.
When you're running the line out, were you under fire yourself?
Well, we could just see the odd shots firing, and we could hear this. The first time we'd heard it was, you think they made a noise exactly as if it was a cow in agony. And we found out it was multi-mortars. And when we heard them, we had to lie flat down. And also we could hear our own machine gunners firing over the top of us. The, I don't know whether it was the Cheshires, or, I think it was the Cheshires, because we had the Northumberlands in Tobruk that was in. And then we got this line out, and the Sea Company, and I just dropped it off there, and we got back to it. And then also we got back to the exchange, till it, I was going in the, we had it in the field, in a dugout, in a sea trench. And all of a sudden this shell, I felt myself being blown against this tree, this hedge, and I'd been lifted by the blast of a shell about 6 yards. But look happened, there's nothing happened to it. I was just shaken up a bit, like.
Was anyone else hit by it?
No, there's nobody else hit, because they're all laid, because I'd just been coming in. So I said, we had a job, it had knocked about 4 lines out.
So you say you were shook up, how long did that feeling last?
Well, it felt for about half an hour.
Mm. And what form did it take?
Well, just like shaking. And then all of a sudden, I got myself up with it, and one of the lads come across his ear, he had a drink of water. And I saved a feeling all right. It was only like a gale, wind. It wasn't a fit, it felt cold. And I just seemed to be floating in air, and I ended up in the hedge. Mm. No bones, no damage, nothing. And when we checked through, we had, I think it was 3 lines, it did 3 lines. Knocked 3 telephone lines out. So we got them mended, like. And the signal officer told me, he says, well, you better rest yourself now. So I got myself behind and started resting. And then I think next morning, we were told we were going to move into Tilly's the Sewers. So we just undid the lines from exchange. We didn't drill them in or nothing, and we just moved up into the village itself.
Was this usual, just to undo the lines and leave them and then move on?
Because we'd been issued with what they call a salt cable. It was little coils with about 200 yards on, and it was very thin wire, plastic covered wire. It was more like aluminium, like, or a tin, something like that. It wasn't copper. And that's what we'd been issued to run out. Mm. And it was quite effective, but on a long distance it wasn't. It wasn't effective, very effective on long. We found that out when we got into Holland. And it wasn't very effective.
So once you laid that out and you moved on, you just left it?
Just left it. But when we went, I'll come across later on, I'll tell you about later on about lines. So we went up into Tilly's the Sewers, and we established ourselves in a, like a cellar, on it, like on a hillside, and where the houses were. And I run a line out to this, ended up by running another line out to B Company, and gets that out all right. And on the night time, the tanks rove it up, the self-propelled guns kept coming up, and they'd all rove it up again. So the CO said, don't bother, because he says, we're most likely to be pulling out of there. And we set off to move, and we went back, and they went to a place called, like the crossroads, they called it Hot Hot. But first of all, it had to be taken, and that's when some of the typhoons came over, shoot up some of the tanks. And
you saw that happening. How effective was that?
Well, it was very effective, because we just saw with the shot, and always there's another tank, because we were what, a good half mile away. We saw the typhoon come down and fire these rockets, and they said that they were very effective. Like, so when we got up to Hot Hot, we found where these two tanks they attacked, and they just lifted them upside down, turned them over. Mm. So we got ourselves established past Hot Hot, No, we didn't. We didn't go exactly into Harter. No, the juice. Yes, that was it. We went into Harter. And we seemed to have it more like road. There was like a crossroads. There was often shelling it. So the D Company was in reserve. And the lads sent out three companies forward. I can't remember. Yeah. But I didn't go forward this time. I took the CO wanted a line back to the reserve company. So he says, I says, I know what to do. I says, instead of putting a full line out, because one of the companies on the left had a line out, and it didn't go. So what I did, I teed in at the road and ran this line down. I says, no, I said, we'll make this company and that company on the same unit. It's a safe cable. So we teed in, and I went down this road and put this line in for them, and they were quite pleased, like. And then, I do not know, and then we went back to where the exchange was. And the next thing we got to know that one of our company had been either hit by one of our own shells or a jury shell, we can't remember. So the signal officer said, well, go and see what he can do. So I went down with one of the lads, and we found out what a mess there was. But one of our lads, one signalers had been wounded, so I said, oh, well, we'll carry him out, like. So me and this lad helps him out, like. He's more like sapper wounds. He was bleeding well, like, so we got him back to HQ. So I went back and found the other lad. He was just shook up. So he said, I said, where's the telephone? He says, it's gone. And the telephone had been blown away. But we couldn't do nothing for any others because they had legs missing, arms missing, and everything. They dropped right on the headquarters. And
did this affect you even at this stage? Have you seen these horrific wounds?
No, not exactly. We took it more like an old stride. And when I went up there, I don't know whether it was C Company or what, but when I first went up, I said, Bar, says, I know you. And there it was a bloke called Blenkinsop. I'd been in China with him. And he was a sergeant major. And when I knew him, he was storming in China. And he says, no, he says, keep your head down, because he says, jury's only a couple of hundred yards away behind this hedge. Ah. And he couldn't understand. Didn't know where he was. He says, tell the truth, I don't know where I was. He says, oh, I've been hit with that shell, I don't know. He says, and he can't remember whether it was one of our own or was the jury one. Because the artillery were firing 25-pounders. They were putting overhead. So we withdrew from there and then went to another place. And I can't remember what it was. We're in this field, all battalion HQ. And I suddenly wanted a line out one of the companies, so I took a line out, got it down, and I can't remember what company it was. So I got myself back, because I had to go like a detour around. And they'd taken a little village, I don't know what name it was, like. And I always remember this, because the film people came up. And they wanted Major Mogg, I don't know where he'd been promoted, but he took command, to reenact, take the village. And he says to them, somebody told me that this is what he said, like, I think it was the signal officer. They said, if you want to film taking a village, he says, you better come with us, because he said, I'm not going to waste my men's time to come back and start and retake that village again. He says, they're getting themselves dug in the other side of the village. He says, that's where they're stopping.
What kind of terrain were you moving and fighting through?
It was fields, hedge backs and everything, like. And
were there difficulties in
moving through? Well, there were difficulties at times, because you didn't know who was behind, whether it was our own troops or was it jury troops. And so gets his line out to this company, and when he gets back again, he says, oh, he says, there's a listener post going out further afield, like, with an officer in, I think, a section with an officer. He says, can you go and run a line? He says, run a direct line from here to that listening post, because he says, it's well away from the company HQ. So I says, right, all right. But it's the same as what we're in the desert, these listening posts. You're not supposed to call them with the ringing tone or the buzzing tone. You're supposed to whisper down or give a whistle. So I was feeling a bit tired, like, then. So I says, well, I'll go out, like. So me and another lad, we takes our drums to cave with us. Gets out to there, finds it eventually with a detour, like up the hedge back, you know what I mean? I had to go, I said, no, wait here, and I said, I'll find where the officer is. So eventually you found them, dug in. Because you're getting dust now, like. Oh, so that's all right. So I brings the lads up, like, and so I told them, I says, no, I says, remember, I says, you won't get a ringing tone or a buzzer. I says, you'll put, I says, no, keep the headset, the handset, close to where you're at, or keep it in your hand all the time. I says, and keep listening, because I says, you'll either get a whistle or somebody will talk. Right. So he gets, rings back to the company, as the HQ, and then, well, I said, that's all right. So I tell him what we've done, so I says, I'm way back. So March is way back, like. No sooner gets back till, hey, he says, you better go out there. He says, I can't raise them. So I says, all right, all right. No. So I says, I'll go back on my own, like. So I picks my hand up and I picks the line up and follows the line all the way. And all of a sudden I gets challenged, like. I says, it's a signaler. No. I says, what's the matter with the phone? He says, I don't know. I says, he says, the officer's in charge. There he's half asleep. He hadn't even in his hand. He had it laid down. And he was about a couple of yards away from it. So
this was the officer?
Second lieutenant he was. I says, excuse me, sir. I says, you have to keep that close to you. I says, near here. Because I says, we can't ring you. Because you'll let the no juries there. And but you could hear the neither judges talking, you know, they were that close.
So you would have to talk in whispers anyway.
How'd you talk in whispers? Because wasn't I was read down.
Wasn't it dangerous going back, following the line over that?
But it was dark. See, that's why I had to pick that hand up. Because I had no equipment. See, I didn't carry any equipment because I had to take all my equipment off because it'd rattle. See, I couldn't take my rifle. Well, I hadn't it. Well, yes, I had a rifle there then. And so I didn't report, but I says, so I rung through, I whispered into the phone, like, well, actually, you could press it, could ring the exchange, because it didn't make a noise. And I get through, I says, it's all right, like. So I says, keep it. So it did. So when I get back, I said, pah, I'm tired, like. So Lieutenant Brooke, the signal officer, says, you get your head down. So I get to a new slit trench, like, and put my ground sheet down, the gas cape over, and I was off. And, you know, I slept for 36 hours.
And they let you sleep?
Oh, yes. When I wakened up, they said, we let you sleep, because we knew we were tired, because I think it was about nearly, I'd never had any sleep for 3 years. And
does sleep affect you in any way when you get to that state? But you really haven't slept for such a long time.
No, I didn't. I was just feeling tired and weary, that's all. And so when I gets up, he says, did you even think when you... He says, when you were asleep, right? I says, no. He says, we've been shelled. And there's potholes all over the place where they've been shelled. Even the toilet had been blown up. He says, a good job. I said, I didn't hear a thing. No.
But what time was this?
No, I can't remember it. I wakened up, I think it was about tea time.
At the time of the year, you know, the month, the date.
Oh, it was either June, it was either July. Can't remember now. So we moved from there, and they went to another place. Where was it? Oh, I can't remember. Oh, we start. Oh, that's right. We that's when we these bombers went over to bomb Villers Bocage. They went over treetop height, these Lancasters, to drop a load of incendiaries and everything, and bombs on the. They said there was a lot of tanks in there. And I can't remember anything from there then on. And then all of a sudden we
Did you know which German units you were facing?
We didn't know. We never, to tell the truth, we never saw any prisoners. We never had much notice of them. But what we did see, Germans coming back, we never thought of. See, they were in getting interrogated further back, like.
Were they beginning to lay booby traps for you?
Oh, yes. Oh, there was loads of booby traps.
Oh, what form
did they take? There was, along by the side of the road, there was these jumper jacks. And there were a lot of anti-tank mines in the roads and the foot, these by roads and everything, like car tracks and everything. And you could see where they'd been putting them in. And but along the gas verge, see, we were told, no, I think further back, some of the men had been killed by these jumper jacks. They had three prongs on them, and they were painted green, just like the grass. And when you stood on them, they went off. Because when you stood on them, you walk straight off. They used to jump up for about 3 to 4 feet, and there was to be all these ball bands used to fly out. But we'd never come across, I never had one, like, but that's what they were told. So we had to be careful not to walk in the grass verge. Because the main mines was on the roads was mainly for tanks and vehicles, because the person could tread on one of them and it wouldn't go off because you hadn't the weight. But that's what also when we come to these farmhouses, there was one typical one. There's one fella went into this barn, and all of a sudden he just blew up. It triggered something off. And then another case where we were stationed, this farmhouse, and it was all plastic. It said booby trapped. It was full of jury mines and ammunition and everything. And we kept well away from it. Then all of a sudden one day it blew up. Oh, it just smithereens. It was a wonder who's gone into there. But they reckon that the rats, rats had set the explosives off. Then there was another one. There was who come by, who march up the road, and they saw this house. Oh, a lovely house it was, like. And there was a lovely clock in the window. Like a marble one, and all nicely shaped and everything, like. And one of the lads says, "Bosh, they're like that." And one of the engineers with him says, "You don't touch anything like that." He says, "Till it's cleared." So I went. And there it was. There was 2 pounds of explosives underneath, because you just need to pick it up and it's gone off. And they also were warned. When we were stationary, we used to, if it rained, we used to get a lot, we were going to get some of this corrugated sheeting anywhere in the farm houses or in the anywhere there was. And one chap had gone and lifted this corrugated sheeting, it blew up. A lot of booby traps.
How did you feel towards the Germans laying this kind of thing?
There was another time that we encountered the. This was before the Phillies gap started the breakthrough. We encountered the Hitler Youth, and our battalion had surrounded them, like, and they wouldn't give up. And I think it was about a couple of days. We kept them pinned down, like, and they kept shooting at our lap. But we can't remember. I can't remember because I was further back, like, just how I was told. And now, so when they run out of mission, they just give the salute. But what happened to them, I don't know. But they killed one or two of the lads, and I think a lot of the sergeants and the officers were furious with them. And so we've got to give them a chance to give up before that. And now then, what else can I remember? Now, we started on the Fleece Gap go. And it was more like on the move all the time. And we come across all this transport that had been shut up by the jury, by the typhoons and the Spitfires, you know. And all littered the road, and there was bodies here, and, but we didn't stop to do any of the bodies. And we were put in trucks, and we went so far, and then we went back to stop. And then we'd go on the march again.